it's only good for a month or two. Unlike most stocks, it often expires worthless. Then the options player must buy another option, only to lose 100% of his or her money again. A string of these, and you're in deep trouble. When you buy a share of even a risky stock, you are contributing something to the growth of the country. That's what stocks are for. In the multi-billion dollar futures and options market, none of the money is put to any constructive use. It doesn't finance anything more than the cars, planes, and houses bought by the brokers and the handful of winners. You've probably heard the term shorting a stock. This enables you to profit from a stock that's going down. Shorting is the same thing as borrowing something from the neighbors, selling the item, and pocketing the money. Sooner or later, you go out and buy the identical item and return it to the neighbors. What the shorter hopes to do is sell the borrowed item at a very high price, buy the replacement at a very low price, and keep the difference. There are some serious drawbacks to going short. During the time you borrow the shares, the rightful owner gets a dividend and other benefits. Also, you can actually spend the proceeds you get from shorting a stock until you paid the shares back and closed out the transaction. You're required to maintain a sufficient balance in your brokerage account to cover the value of the shorted stock. None of us is immune to the panic we feel when a normal stock drops in price, but our panic is restrained by our understanding the stock cannot go lower than zero. If you shorted something that's going up, you begin to realize there's nothing to stop it from going to infinity, because there's no ceiling on a stock price. Stocks that are supposed to go down but don't remind me of the cartoon characters who walk off cliffs into thin air. As long as they don't recognize their predicament, they just hang out there forever. Before I continue with the last part of this program, let me remind you of the following points dealing with the long-term view. Market declines are great opportunities to buy stocks and companies you like. Different categories of stocks carry with them different risks and rewards. Stock prices often move in opposite directions from the fundamentals, but long-term, the direction and sustainability of profits will prevail. Just because a company is doing poorly doesn't mean it can't do worse. Just because the price goes up doesn't mean you're right. Just because the price goes down doesn't mean you're wrong. Stalwarts with heavy institutional ownership that have outperformed the market and are overpriced are due for a rest or a decline. Buying a company with mediocre prospects just because the stock is cheap is a losing technique. Companies don't grow without a reason. Fast growers don't grow quickly forever. You don't lose anything by not owning a successful stock, even if it's a 10-bagger. Don't become so attached to a winner that complacency sets in and you stop monitoring the story. If a stock goes to zero, you lose just as much money whether you bought it for $50 or for $2 a share. You lose everything you invested. You can improve your results by careful pruning and rotation based on fundamentals. When stocks are out of line with reality and better alternatives exist, sell and switch into something else. If you don't think you can beat the market, buy a mutual fund and save yourself a lot of extra work and money. You can miss lots of 10-baggers and still beat the market. I have.
Chapter 20. 50,000 Frenchmen Can Be Wrong.
Thinking back over the years, I remember several news events and their effects on the prices of stocks, beginning with President Kennedy's election. I was 16 in 1960, and I had already heard that a Democratic presidency was always bad for stocks. I was surprised that day after the election, the market rose slightly. During the Cuban Missile Crisis, the one and only time America faced the immediate prospect of nuclear war, I feared for myself, my family, and my country. Yet the stock market fell less than 3%. 7 months later, when President Kennedy forced the steel industry to roll back prices, I feared for nothing. but the market had one of its largest declines in history, 7%. I was mystified that the potential of a nuclear holocaust was less terrifying to Wall Street than the president's meddling in the steel business. The great events of the 1970s and the market reactions to them were as follows. Nixon imposes price controls. Market up 3%. Nixon resigns. Market down 1%. Ford's whip inflation now buttons were introduced. Market up 4.6%. IBM wins a big antitrust case. Market up 3.3%. The decade of the 70s was the poorest for stocks since the 1930s. And yet, the major one-day changes were all upward on the days just mentioned. The event of most lasting consequence was OPEC's oil embargo of October 19, 1973. This helped to take the market down 16% in 3 months and 39% in 12 months. It's interesting to note that the market did not respond to the significance of the embargo at the time. It actually rose 4 points on that day and climbed an additional 14 points before starting its dramatic fall. This demonstrates that the market, like individual stocks, can move in the opposite direction of the fundamentals over the short term. The 1980s have had more days of exceptional gains and losses than were seen in all the other decades combined. In the big picture, most of them are meaningless. I'd rank the 508-point drop in October 1987 far below the meeting of the economic ministers on September 22, 1985, for its importance to long-term investors. At this conference, the major industrial nations agreed to coordinate economic policy and allow the value of the dollar to decline. After that decision was announced, the general market rose 38% over 6 months, had an even greater impact on specific companies which benefited from the lower dollar. In my opinion, the breakup of AT&T ranks near the top of the most important developments in the stock market. It affected 2.96 million shareholders and over a million employees. The wobble of October 1987 doesn't even rank in my top three. Lately, I've been hearing that the small investor has no chance in this dangerous environment. I've been hearing that the era of professional management has brought new sophistication and intelligence to the stock market. There are 50,000 stock pickers dominating the show, and like the expression, 50,000 Frenchmen can't be wrong, they can't possibly be wrong. From where I sit, I'd say the 50,000 stock pickers are usually right, but only for the last 20% of a typical move. It's that last 20% that Wall Street studies for, clamors for, and then lines up for, all the while with a sharp eye on the exits. The idea is to make a quick gain and then stampede out the door. Small investors don't have to fight this mob. They can calmly walk in the entrance when there's a crowd at the exit, and they can walk out the exit when there's a crowd at the entrance. I've been hearing that the 1987-88 market is a rerun of the 1929-30 market, and we're about to enter another Great Depression. So far, the 1987-88 market has behaved very much like the 1929-30 market. But so what? If we have another depression, it won't be because the stock market crashed, any more than the earlier depression happened because the stock market crashed. In those days, only 1% of Americans owned stocks. The earlier depression was caused by an economic downturn in a country in which 66% of the workforce was in manufacturing, 22% was in farming, and the service sector was only 12%. There was no Social Security, unemployment compensation, pension plans, welfare and Medicare, guaranteed student loans, or government-insured bank accounts. Today, manufacturing represents only 27% of the workforce. Agriculture accounts for a mere 3%, and the service sector has grown steadily through recession and boom. It now accounts for 70% of the U.S. workforce. Unlike the 30s, a large percentage of people now own or have equity built up in their own homes. The average household now has two wage earners instead of one, providing an economic cushion that didn't exist 60 years ago. If we have a depression, it won't be like the last one. Every day I hear that major companies are going out of business. Some of them are. But what about the thousands of smaller companies that are going into business and providing millions of new jobs? As I make my usual rounds, I'm amazed to discover that many companies are going strong. Some are actually earning money. If we've lost all sense of enterprise and our will to work, then who are those people who seem to be stuck in the rush hour? Frequent follies notwithstanding, I continue to be optimistic about America, Americans, and investing in general. When you invest in stocks, you have to have a basic faith in human nature, in capitalism, in the country at large, and in future prosperity in general. So far, nothing has been strong enough to shake my faith.
If you enjoyed this audio program, look for more Simon & Schuster productions at your local bookstore or record store. Call our toll-free number, 1-800-678-2677. This has been a Simon & Schuster audio presentation.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.